take a seat. You plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So glad you could be here. Joining us in beautiful legal potland, Oregon, where there's some tiny bits of blue sky out there. Who knows? We might actually get summer here someday, and summer is coming this weekend. Looking forward to that, finally getting into the official summer season. I guess it's Monday is when summer kicks off, right? So I'm here in beautiful legal potland. I was supposed to be in New York and then San Francisco this week, but those plans fell through. So here I am in beautiful legal potland. Still trying to find a way to make it to that NCIA event in Oakland next week. It's Monday through Wednesday. Keeping my fingers crossed. I got people working on it for me. We'll see. I would really love to make it out to that event. And then just a quick note to the listeners out there. Starting this a week from tomorrow, which would be Friday the 24th, I'm out on vacation. I've got my annual or my semi-annual two-week vacation. I usually take vacations around 4th of July and around Christmas week, so that's coming up, believe it or not. So starting on the 24th, I will be off through the 4th of July weekend, probably be back on the air the 5th or the 6th. We're still looking at that as far as when we'll come back on the air. But during that time, I'm going to have some Best of the Russ Belville Show archives pulled up for you. We're going to put together some of my most interesting interviews over the past 9 months for you to listen to over those couple of weeks. So you'll still have something to listen to. It'll be old stuff, but repackaged. So you'll get like a whole bunch of really good interviews in one show. So check that out coming up starting on July 24th or June 24th, excuse me, June 24th, leading up to my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And believe it or not, I have been ordained as a minister to lead over their wedding renewal. They're going to do a vow renewal. So I am now a ordained minister with the Universal Life Church. You can call me the Reverend Dr. Radical Russ, I guess. All right. So let's get to the show today. It is Thursday. So that means we're going to have a visit from one of our good friends at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition for our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment. We've got retired Senior Patrol Officer Tim Johnson joining us from Hilliard, Ohio. So we'll talk to him about what's happening with medical marijuana in the state and his experience as a police officer on the front lines, how he learned that we need to legalize all drugs. So that's coming up at half past the hour. Right after that, in the Radical Rant, I'm going to take aim at a new paper out from the Brookings Institute on the reframing of the marijuana debate. It takes a look at how we managed to break through the logjam of the 70s and 80s and get marijuana medicalized and then legalized, and how our opponents are reacting to that and changing their tactics and strategy, and particularly their framing. And you know I love framing, so we're going to talk all about that coming up at the end of the show in the Radical Rant. Also on the show today, we've got time for some drug war data mining, and I'm going to show you, using information from the treatment episode data set at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency, that medical marijuana hasn't done a damn thing to stop forced marijuana rehabs. We'll take a look at the data. And then we've also got a behind the headlines segment where our good friend Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of Normal, has listed out how absurd it is to keep marijuana in federal Schedule 1 and why rescheduling is not a good idea either. It needs to be descheduled. But all that comes after the Cannabis Radio News. We got headlines from L.A., Pennsylvania, Montana, California, New Jersey, and more when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Thank you. Maui Wowie, Acapulco Gold, California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Get the latest updates on The Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking The Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, June 16th, 2016. Los Angeles, California. The first huge multinational corporation to jump into the marijuana market isn't the long-feared agri-giant Monsanto or tobacco company Altria. It's tech titan Microsoft. The Washington-based software and tech company has partnered with Kind Financial to acquire government contracts for Kind's seed-to-sale tracking software. Matt Cook, formerly with the Colorado Marijuana Enforcement Division, will serve as Kind's special advisor on government matters. Kind's software platform will host data on the Microsoft Cloud for Government, known as Azure. Referring to the cooperative agreement between Microsoft and Kind, Microsoft Director of Government Solutions Kimberly Nelson said, quote, Kind agreed that Azure Government is the only cloud platform designed to meet government standards for the closely regulated cannabis compliance platforms, end quote. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. City Council discussed the possibility of marijuana decriminalization in Harrisburg during Wednesday night's meeting. Councilman Cornelius Johnson unveiled a proposal that goes even further than a decriminalization proposal floated by Mayor Eric Papenfuse just 4 months ago. While Papenfuse's proposal created a $100 civil fine for marijuana possession, it escalated that fine for subsequent offenses and mandated that a third strike reverse back to a misdemeanor. Johnson's proposal would lower that fine to $75 and require that a third strike would only be a misdemeanor if it occurs within a 5-year time frame. Johnson's proposal also decriminalizes paraphernalia, something Papenfuse's proposal did not consider, which would mean many marijuana possession tickets would still earn paraphernalia misdemeanors. Johnson's proposal also raises the public toking fine to $150 to discourage public use. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia on Thursday became the first U.S. city to approve a tax on soft drinks. By a vote of 13-4, the Philadelphia City Council approved a 1.5 cent per ounce tax that will affect sodas and other sugary drinks, including teas, sports drinks, and energy drinks. Drinks exempt from the tax are those that are more than 50% fruit juice, vegetable juice, or milk, said Lauren Hitt, the communications director for the mayor's office. The tax is expected to raise $91 million annually and fund city projects, including pre-kindergarten expansion, the creation of community schools, and an investment in parks and recreation centers. The tax will raise the price of a 2-liter soda bottle by about 50 cents. Sonoma County, California, police and DEA conducted raids against Absolute Extracts and CBD Guild, two of Northern California's most prominent manufacturers of medical cannabis oils. Santa Rosa police officials arrested Dennis Franklin Hunter, age 43, for felony manufacturing of a controlled substance. Hunter is being held on a $5 million bail because of his history of evading police, including 4 years on the lam for a previous pot production charge. The companies are accused of using illegal and hazardous production methods in violation of municipal codes. Nick Kasten, a spokesperson for CBD Guild and Absolute Extracts, said their companies are collectives operating in compliance with all state laws. The CBD Guild's 34,000-square-foot production facility uses supercritical CO2, not the butane they're accused of using in violation of California law. Trenton, New Jersey. The New Jersey Assembly has, by a 55-14 vote, approved the use of medical marijuana by those suffering from post-traumatic stress. There is a requirement that patients prove that other conventional therapies aren't working. A previous bill from April that would allow women to use medical marijuana to combat menstrual pain has languished in the Assembly. And Assembly Democrat Reed Gascoria has floated the idea that legalizing marijuana in Atlantic City could save that beleaguered city just as casino gambling saved it back in the 1970s. All these proposals face a daunting path in getting past the New Jersey Senate and then past the veto pen of Governor Chris Christie, who has vowed that he will never allow the medical marijuana program to expand or marijuana legalization to occur on his watch. Helena, Montana. The Montana Cannabis Industry Association is asking a district judge to further delay enforcement of a stringent new Montana medical marijuana restrictions that are to go into effect August 31st. The association on Tuesday filed a motion with Montana's first judicial district court in Helena for a stay. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, June 16th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com. The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
This is Dan Michaels from DanMichaelsAudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we're taking a look at what I am calling the drug splainstream media. That is, we now have voices in the mainstream media that are very sympathetic to our point of view and cognizant of the fact, science, reason, and logic behind cannabis. We've seen this in the Washington Post, where Christopher Ingraham writes the Wonk blog column that many times has focused on the insanity of the drug war. We've also seen it in Time Magazine and Time Online with the inclusion of columns by Maya Salovitz, the author of Unbroken Brain and an expert in drugs and addiction. And now I'm very excited to announce the inclusion of our third mainstream media voice, and that comes to us from thehill.com, which is the blog for the folks working inside the Beltway out there on Capitol Hill and such. And the writer is Normal's own Paul Armentano, the deputy director of Normal and one of the best educated people on marijuana policy and science. He begins now a regular column for The Hill and opens up today with his first column entitled "Time to Remove Marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act." Notice that's remove it, not reschedule it. And he makes a point that the DEA has indicated in recent memorandums that they are imminently going to decide on a couple of petitions for the rescheduling of marijuana. Now, just quick background scheduling if you're new to the show. The Controlled Substances Act of 1970, which is America's drug law, breaks down drugs into five scheduled categories that have to do with how medical they are, how likely they are to be abused, and so forth. Schedule 5 is the lowest. Going all the way up to Schedule 2, those are the drugs that can be prescribed by doctors, but there are increasing restrictions. For example, Schedule 2 drugs, you can't get your own refills. You have to go to the doctor for every refill. There's a limited number they can give you. The doctors are monitored for how many prescriptions of those drugs they're giving, and so forth. Okay. But Schedule 1, the one at the very top, are drugs that cannot be prescribed by doctors. They include LSD and PCP and peyote and magic mushrooms and heroin is up there too, and cannabis. Cannabis and all of its biologically active components are Schedule 1 prohibited substances. And Schedule 1 says, 1, the substance must possess a high potential for abuse. 2, it must have no currently accepted medical use in the United States. And 3, the substance must lack accepted safety for use under medical supervision. Now, we know that this is all bunk because there's two substances you can name right off the top of your head, alcohol and tobacco, that are not classified in any of the five schedules. In fact, they have their own federal designation, their own federal regulations that come under the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. So they're not even in the Controlled Substances Act. So right at first blush, the idea that marijuana would be in there and tobacco and alcohol wouldn't makes no sense whatsoever. But Paul continues to go on about the classification here. We have 26 states now and the District of Columbia that have statutory medical marijuana language. Now, Louisiana's is dysfunctional, but it does at least have government recognition of medical marijuana. So the idea that there's no accepted medical use in the United States when a majority of the states containing a majority of the population recognize the medical use is just untenable. And as far as the accepted safety for use under medical supervision, clearly these people in the medical marijuana states are being supervised by doctors, even if it's California where it's just the slightest amount of supervision, and seemingly able to use these substances safely. So there are a couple petitions. One was filed by a nurse practitioner in 2009. A second petition filed in 2011 by the then Washington State Governor Christine Gregoire and the then Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee. So those are the two petitions that DEA might respond to as far as whether they're going to deschedule or reschedule. And there's numerous petitions before that. Of course, Normal filed the first one in 1972, didn't get a hearing until 1986. In 1988, Francis Young said marijuana was the safest therapeutically active substance known to man during that lawsuit. But in 1990, the DEA ignored his recommendations and maintained the illegality of marijuana. President Obama says that this is something Congress should do. Congress says this is something that the FDA and NIDA need to weigh in on. But the fact remains that the president right now could deschedule marijuana with just a stroke of the pen. Let's hope Obama does that in his last days.
Maybe we should start at 420, right? Marijuana reference.
All right. Thanks, Homer. That sound means that it's time for us to take a break. It's 20 after out there in the mountain time zone. So happy 420 to our friends in New Mexico and Montana, Wyoming, places where 420 is a little harder to celebrate than Denver, Colorado. But we hope you're celebrating nonetheless. We're back in just 2 minutes with some rehab stats.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
St. Paul's doing good work.
It's Mike Gregory of Poontang, if I can use a medical term.
Yes, the New England Medical Journal.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Right. Well, you can call me Dr. St. Paul now.
Dr. St. Paul.
I don't think I will.
No. You wouldn't even qualify to be a vet.
I'm a special kind of vet. I make them less lonely.
The Stoner Jesus Show. Live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome, everybody, to the Drug War Data Mines. Today, we are going to be taking a look at figures from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive, or SAMHSA. This is part of the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. And you can follow along, if you like, by going to the internet. It's SAMHSA, SAMHSA, SAMHSA.gov/data. And that's where you can find a treasure trove of government information, surveys, and other data regarding drug use, mental health, drug rehabs, and so forth. Today, we're taking a look at data from what's called TEDS, the Treatment Episode Data Set, and particularly TEDS A, which is the admission data. They also have TEDS D, which is the discharge data. But we're going with TEDS A. And TEDS A reflects the data from all of the rehab entities out there that accept some sort of federal money, and therefore they have to do federal reporting. So this is not all rehabs. Private rehabs may not be included in this data if they take no federal money. The last estimate I heard was this represents at least 58% of the rehabs out there. There's no reason to expect that the other rehabs data might be very much different, but again, I can't confirm because the private entities aren't required to report. But from what we get out of TEDS A, with my research today, I can come up with a very definitive statement, and that is Medical marijuana has done nothing to stop the forced rehab of marijuana consumers. Now, this forced rehab I talk about is when you get busted with weed in an illegal state, you usually end up getting some sort of probation. And sometimes that probation can come with a sort of a rehab element, whether it be inpatient or outpatient. And you are required to go to this rehab and required to submit to, you know, sometimes the 12 steps, which is kind of a pseudo-religious thing. It's not been scientifically proven to be any better than quitting cold turkey. And oftentimes required to submit to your analysis, drug tests, that, of course, make the drug testing providers more money, make the rehab providers more money, and so forth. So as I look at this data, the TEDS-A data, I decided to take a look at the reports from 1996 and 2012. So 1996 would be the data that was collected up through 1995, so it reflects data pre-medical marijuana. Then, collecting the data in 2012 gives us the information for pre-legalization, but post a whole lot of medical marijuana. So what have the differences been? The first thing I took a look at were people that were referred to rehab for marijuana, where marijuana was the only thing they were referred for. And this is done by some variables. MARFLG, MAR flag, is positive if someone has checked in for marijuana. And there's another variable called num subs, which means number of substances. And I flag that for one substance. So MAR flag, yes, one substance would mean marijuana. And what we find is that there were 53,000 people referred to drug treatment for marijuana. 53,000 in 1996. When we look at that data for 2012, there were 132,000 people referred simply for marijuana. So between 96 and 2012, we've seen it more than double the number of people that were forced, or the number of people in rehab for marijuana alone. The other substances, though, didn't change much. In 1992, there were 634,000 people, almost 635,000 people, that were reported for one drug that wasn't marijuana, some other drug that was not marijuana. 635,000. In 2012, 605,000. There are actually a few, there were a little bit fewer people admitted for other drugs, just one drug, than admitted for marijuana. While marijuana doubled, the rest of the drugs stayed the same. So even though we've medicalized now 2012, it was what, 18, 20 states? Even with all those medical marijuana laws, we got twice as many people going to rehab for marijuana, but the same number of people going to rehab for other drugs. Again, specifying just one drug, because a lot of these you can enter with two or three drugs. Could be alcohol and marijuana, could be marijuana, coke, and heroin, whatever. Another way to look at this is, what sent the people to rehab? What made them end up in rehab? And what we find is in 1996, 53% of the people that went to rehab, I'm sorry, in 96, it was 54% of the people going to rehab were forced there by the criminal justice system because they had to go to a drug court or they got busted with weed. In 2012, that number's hardly budged. It's now 53%. So just about the same. And what it shows us is throughout the entire medical marijuana era, more than half the people in rehab for marijuana alone are there because they were forced there. And what we find is that they're not really that addicted to marijuana. Both in 96 and 2012, we find there was only about 20 to 22% of the people who went to rehab that were daily marijuana users. When it comes to the 2012 data, 36% of them had not smoked marijuana in a month before they went to rehab. Compare that to the other drugs. With the other drugs, 42% of the people in rehab for other drugs, 42% used it daily, compared to 20% for marijuana. And 25% had not used it in a month, compared to 36% for marijuana. Finally, you're much more likely, if you are a marijuana consumer, to have been admitted by the criminal justice system or other referral sources than any other drug. It's time to stop forcing people into rehabs they don't need for their use of marijuana. We're back with Cops Say Legalized Drugs, Tim Johnson from Ohio, when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Fuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Fuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Fuber way.
It's time for cannabis facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabat since 2012.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalized drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 33 after the hour. Today in our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, we go to Ohio, where we're joined by retired senior patrol officer Tim Johnson out there in Hilliard. And Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Russ. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us here. And I was told you're a retired senior patrol officer. Tell us about your background. When did you start and for how long were you on the force?
After completing college in the early 80s, I actually got into law enforcement in the early 90s, and I retired approximately 2 years ago in 2014. My background involves patrol functions, undercover narcotics, task force units from local to federal, community relations, field training officer, a variety of specialties I was involved in.
So you were involved in law enforcement from, you know, before medical marijuana took off in California to after legalization happened in Colorado then?
That's true.
Okay. So in your time working as a patrol officer and especially in the undercover narcotics business, do you have any estimate on how many times or how many busts you made of cannabis growers, sellers, consumers?
Well, I can say I made too many. from that perspective, to reflect real quick on one of my first arrests was of a 19-year-old boy smoking a joint in a pavilion in a park one day. The outcome of that was under the decrim laws in Ohio that we presumed that existed, the individual, just for mere possession of a joint, ended up with a criminal charge in the court case. As a result of that, he lost his college tuition. He lost his driving privileges for a period of time. He also lost the part-time job he had. And that kind of led him. I kept track of the individual, and that's when I realized that the war on drugs, that we were approaching it in the wrong aspects.
So this, and a lot of people who are listening, they may not know, but Ohio has the greatest decrim amount in the country at 100 grams of possession. So how did that end up becoming a criminal charge?
Once it gets into the court, it's really up to the judge. The statutes are set as guidelines for the courts, for the judge, for them to decide what the punishment and the penalties are going to be. As a result, in this particular case, it's the mere possession charge. He ended up with a misdemeanor criminal charge rather than just the assumed that a minimal fine amount and no criminal record and then move on down the street. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for him.
Yeah. How long ago was this case? Do you remember?
I'm going to say probably in 1999.
Wow. So what's it like then when you're working as a cop from 1999 on and continuing to make these busts of cannabis consumers and growers and sellers? But like, I know part of it must be, hey, I'm a cop. I don't write the laws. I got to obey, I got to enforce the laws as they're written. But does it like inside just start to eat at you and start to make you feel any sort of guilt or regret?
It definitely does, Russ. And a lot of times it is the officer's discretion out there, but discretion goes out the door when a fellow officer arrives for a backup.
Right.
Or you have a supervisor on the scene with you, or you're working search warrants of that nature. That discretion kind of goes out the door as from a professional standard at that point. Mm-hmm. What has to be done is the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law.
Yeah. So if you're in a situation where you're approaching the 19-year-old kid by yourself and he's got a joint, you might just take it from him, put it out, and send him on his way. But when your partner's there or the supervisor's there, you got to follow the letter of the law, right?
That's true. Yeah. You're forced under administrative pressures to make decisions that may not be the best of your morals and values, but rather those that are set by society.
And of course, I talk to cops every other week here, ex-cops and prosecutors here on this show. And, one of the jokes that we have is that, you never got sent out to any brawl or domestic disturbance and found nothing but joints and bongs laying around. It was usually alcohol. Does that knowledge percolate up to the upper ranks? And if so, do they just ignore it because they know there's so much money involved in keeping marijuana criminal?
I believe you're right on the mark there. That definitely goes uphill. The further you climb the ladder in the law enforcement career field, the more adamant you are about following the letter of the law so that you can maintain that position. And it definitely, there is a lot of money involved in it. There are drug seizure funds that every department has. A lot of departments, especially smaller ones, rely on those drug seizure funds for equipment for the department, uniforms, continued education, and so forth. And cannabis does provide quite a bit of a good flow of funds there for departments.
So in moving forward, Ohio right now has just passed a medical marijuana law. And there was a lot of input from law enforcement about that, trying to make it as restrictive as possible. But do you think that medical law might be, changing some of law enforcement's attitudes in Ohio or not?
I can tell you for a fact that it's changing. What it's doing is, I call it the one percenter bill myself because of the lack of actual number of patients it's going to help. Mm-hmm. The problem with what's going to happen is, not only do we still have the criminal statutes for possession or cultivation or distribution of a controlled Schedule I substance, now we'll have an additional set of criminal statutes for a medicinal cannabis. And a lot of people don't, I guess they don't believe or understand that aspect of it. That's how I look at what's being developed. And, of course, I did speak with several senators, several representatives, and brought that to their attention. However, you know, the bill did get passed, and it is what it is. And they're in the process now of promulgating those new statutes that will come into use or into play in the future.
As I looked at that medical bill in Ohio, and it finally passed with the ability of patients to get whole plant, that is cannabis buds, from a dispensary. They can't grow their own, but they can get it from a dispensary, but they can't be smoked. And that sounded to me like a law enforcement addition there, so that they could still bust people with a burnt joint or a marijuana pipe. Do you think that's what went down?
Yeah, law enforcement played a very large part. There were a few that did come in and testify at several of the different steps of the hearings along the way. That was their concerns. Well, I think one of their biggest concerns, and one of the chief deputies actually said it, that if they're not allowed to smoke it anymore, then how can we smell it? Well, you can smell it even if it's not burnt. There's burnt cannabis and there's, you know, fresh cannabis.
Yeah.
The point with Ohio's law, what they actually call it is plant material. So it hasn't really, there's a great cloud there, whether or not it's actually at a dispensary, whether or not you're going to be able to get the actual bud. And if so that happens, you will have to vaporize that.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose when people get their bud at home, they'll make sure to not smoke it with the same degree of diligence that they obey the "for tobacco use only" sign in the head shop. I think people are probably going to smoke at home still.
I'll give my personal perception on it. The bill has a point. There are a lot of children and a lot of adults that do need the medicine. It's just the way that the bill is written. It's really enhanced the black market, in my opinion, because it's so restrictive. It's biased and prejudiced towards the type of ailments that people will have. And then again, the majority of people that are on those types of medications for those ailments are on Medicare, Medicaid, some form of insurance. Well, the dispensaries don't cover that. Mm. So you have to pay cash out of pocket. And I see very high costs from other states, from hundreds to thousands of dollars a month for the treatments for their medicinal cannabis. And I just can't see myself being a patient or a qualifying patient under the House Bill 523. I don't believe I'll be able to afford those prices.
Mm. And so this is something you're looking at as a medical treatment for yourself?
Yes, I am. That's a definite consideration. And we still are striving to, once the bill's actually in effect, to start making amendments to it as soon as we can to bring in some real life realization to what the reality of that bill is.
Okay. Now, most famously, last year, Ohio had the chance to legalize marijuana, but it was a very flawed initiative that kind of set up an oligopoly of the original investors. It was soundly rejected by Ohio voters. But do you think they rejected it for the business aspect? Do you think that possibly they could be ready in Ohio to vote for legalization as soon as 2020?
I believe they'll be voting next year for it.
Oh, really?
There are movements out there now, and there are bills that are not bills, but amendments that have been approved by the Attorney General's office. There are organizations that are actively collecting signatures at this time for next year. And there's still an organization that has a chance to get it on this year if they continue with it. We don't know at this point what they're going to do, but we'll wait and see what's going to happen.
All right. And you think the people could pass it?
I believe the people will, because the House bill, I believe, lifted a lot of the social stigma that is placed upon cannabis as the reefer madness attitude and perception of it. So I believe that can happen, and I do see it happening. I believe that last year, the monopolistic thing, I really don't believe that played a part in it. I believe it was pro-cannabis against pro-cannabis that defeated that bill. And I think this year here, there's a stronger chance for Ohio to come back. If not this November of 17, I can see them coming back with something on the ballot.
Oh, I could. I'm really looking forward to that. We'd like to get Ohio in the legal category. We've been speaking with Tim Johnson, a retired senior patrol officer from the state of Ohio. He's a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. The group is called LEAP, and you can find them at leap.cc. They got speakers all around the country that'll show up to your Lions Club, your Rotary Club. I don't know. You do high school assemblies, college gigs too?
Yes, we do. From schools clear up through the corporate ladder, we're available for all civic associations, community organizations, business organizations, all levels of school. We're well rehearsed in those.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for all the work you did as a police officer, except the part about busting cannabis consumers. But at least you're making amends for that by being with LEAP, and we appreciate that a lot.
Certainly trying to do it.
All right. Good luck to you, and good luck to the state of Ohio.
Thanks, Russ, again. Please reach us at LEAP, copsaylegalizeddrugs.com.
That's right. copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. Check it out. One of my favorite groups out there, one of the most important groups out there, fighting for our freedom. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have time for the Radical Rant. We're taking a look at a paper from the Brookings Institute on the reframing of the marijuana debate. Important information you need to know to win the water cooler wars when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestle trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. Today in the Radical Rant, we want to talk a little bit about the reframing of the marijuana debate, and this comes to us from an interesting paper out of the Brookings Institute entitled Bootleggers, Baptists, Bureaucrats, and Bongs, How Special Interests Will Shape Marijuana Legalization. And the authors, Philip Wallach and Jonathan Rauch, examine how special interests are shaping legalization and regulation in the United States. It's an interesting paper, kind of takes us through some of the history, explaining how the original prohibition arguments were dominated by what they call an iron triangle of anti-legalization interests: moralists and public health advocates who believe marijuana use is wrong or harmful, commercial and gray markets with stakes in drug treatment and medical marijuana, and law enforcement and quasi-governmental entities whose budgets and missions are sustained by the war on drugs. In other words, the Baptists, bootleggers, and bureaucrats. Baptists being just a nice catch-all term, doesn't mean necessarily just religious Baptists, but the moral angle. And so you think of it as a stool with three legs, right? So the three-legged stool of prohibition is the moral angle, the what about the children people, the just say no people, the drugs are bad people. And then you've got your commercial and gray market interests. So you got your black market growers, your cartels, and your industries that make a buck on prohibition. So your drug rehabs, your drug testers, your prison guard unions, your police unions, and then the bureaucrats that make their money. Again, that kind of bleeds over into the law enforcement side, but also NIDA, DEA, FDA, and so forth. And so what they describe is how we broke through that, how we were able to win some reforms, had to do with reframing. And the problem that they identify is that when you look at the marijuana reform efforts of the 70s and 80s, normal primarily, the efforts were all pro-marijuana efforts in the sense that it's a kind of a libertarian argument. It's my body, my choice. I can smoke pot if I want to. It enhances my life. It's something that shouldn't be restricted and so forth. And that couldn't break through the iron triangle. It couldn't break through the Baptists, bootleggers, and bureaucrats. So the change comes in the 1990s with the reframing of the debates. And primarily, what these authors argue is that the reframing of the debate went to, instead of the pros of marijuana use, we start to emphasize the harms of marijuana prohibition. Now, I've said this many times on the show, that it's not so much that you got to sell that pot is good, you got to sell that prohibition is bad. It's going to be impossible to sell some people on the idea that marijuana is good. Especially the Baptists, right? The Baptist side, the moral side, is never going to think marijuana use is good. So you have to come up with a greater evil for them to hate. And that's what I believe medical marijuana did in the 1990s. I believe that what happened in the framing shift there, and this is something I didn't read a lot about from these authors. They put a lot of emphasis into the idea that Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and others were selling the idea that prohibition is bad, that there's harms from criminal prohibition, the criminal markets, the violence, and so forth. But I think they gave short shrift to the effect of the framing of medical marijuana, because the framing of medical marijuana also helped to topple that iron triangle of prohibitionists. For the Baptist side, it tilted the table in our favor by conjuring up the compassion, by evoking the compassion that religious and moral people tend to have, right? And we used kind of a jujitsu on it, right? The reason that the Baptist types say drugs are bad, just say no, the reason they, what about the children? The reason they have that attitude is out of an altruistic want to help, to want to prevent bad things from happening. They're trying to be helpful to society. So with medical marijuana, we flipped their compassion on them. We said, how could you not be compassionate enough to help a cancer patient ease their pain, to help an epileptic kid stop seizing, to help someone in chronic pain get some relief? And it became kind of, if you can think of it as a scale, they had to weigh how much good they thought they were doing by stopping adults from wanting to smoke pot for fun versus how much good they would be doing if they helped cancer patients, AIDS patients, epileptics, people with glaucoma, and so forth. And that, I believe, is what finally tilted that three-legged stool. It took the Baptists out. It took out the moral problem with supporting a marijuana reform. As for the bootleggers, Baptist bootleggers and bureaucrats, as for the bootleggers, the people who have the ulterior motives, you might say, for wanting to maintain prohibition, we were able to take out some of them as well. Not the rehabs, not the prison guards, not those type of people, but at least the growers and sellers who'd been operating on the black market could be enticed to support a medical marijuana reform that would create a legal market for what it is they're doing. So we attacked two of the three areas that the prohibitionists had been using successfully to deny us. And that, I believe, is a large reason why the framing of medical marijuana needs to get a little more attention in this paper. Now, the next point they make is how our opponents now are starting to reframe for themselves as well. Because they've lost that moral high ground of trying to protect society. We were able to flip that on them by showing how marijuana prohibition harms society. So now they're trying to flip it back. And the paper does a good job of telling us about Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, the Kevin Sibet Anti-Pot Legalization Group, which has learned through trial and error that the only message they've really got that resonates anymore is the idea of corporate predation. The idea that big marijuana is going to be created, and there's going to be these big marijuana corporations that have regulatory capture. They're able to set their own rules and have their own watchdogs. And then they'll go about trying to addict youngsters and lie about the harmfulness of their products and so forth. And one of the genius moves of this is that normally marijuana reforms are supported by people of a progressive bent, especially people that aren't necessarily pot smokers themselves, but there are more progressive types. And for them, there's a natural deep-seated distrust of big corporate power. So it's kind of a shrewd move to try to use a sort of rhetorical jujitsu to turn, just like we turned the Baptists and their compassion for the sick and dying against them, they're turning to our progressives, our hippy-dippy types, and using their fear of big corporations against us. So that's the next big framing battle that we've got. And like I said, this was learned through trial and error. Kevin Sibet threw out five or six different attack lines throughout 2012 and 2013 just to see which ones would stick. There's a whole bunch of them that didn't stick. He tried to sell the line that the tax revenue benefits from legalizing marijuana wouldn't be all they were promised to be because the social costs would outweigh the taxes. Well, we've raised $121 million in taxes. Nobody has seen even $121 million worth of social harms. He's tried the, marijuana legalization would send the wrong message to the children. And that's gone out the window because the last three different federal surveys have shown that even though the kids are getting the message that marijuana is safe and something that adults should be able to use, they are not using it any more than they had been. And in some cases, some demographics are using it less. So they tried all of these different. Oh, and another one he tried was the marijuana isn't really medicine. You know, we don't smoke opium to get the benefits of pain relief. We have morphine. Why would we smoke marijuana? He tried that line, too. That one's gone away because now 80 to 90% of the United States believes that marijuana is medical. It's a great paper. It's up at brookings.edu. I'm sure if you just search for bootleggers, Baptists, and bureaucrats, you can read all about it. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us, and stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll talk about the news of the day, what's happening all around the country in marijuana reform and other politics. Got some interesting things on Governor Gary Johnson to tell you about. Get you an update on the Jill Stein campaign. And, of course, Bernie Sanders is speaking on a live webcast later today. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.